This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Self-destruct.
It's time to begin the football weekend.
And as they say in Tinseltown, roll up.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Spray.
They had pride. They had talent. They had hats and t-shirts.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, what is happening, everybody? Welcome in. Happy Football Friday to ya.
24 Reno.
Rambo!
It's Monday.
4-3 Dallas,
right? Holly,
Red Holly.
Here we go.
Oh, it feels good. Happy Football Friday. No Brandon Sprague today. He is out. It is his anniversary, his 12th wedding anniversary. So congrats to the Spragues right out of the gate. They're going to the coast this weekend for the anniversary. I do have a funny story on that note that we can get to in a moment. But we're playing her today. You doing all right over there, Swag? Good morning.
I'm gutting through.
We got our Jordan flu game, if you will, on the show this morning.
No, I don't know what it is. I'm going to the dentist right after the show, and hopefully I will have one less tooth by the end of the day.
So we got a tooth problem. That's our issue.
We had a tooth problem. It's been going along. There was something, and it was just kind of annoying. It felt like I had a tooth that had like gotten bumped, like squeezed in a up above the rest of the tooth line, the bite line.
Yes, not good.
So I went to the dentist and they looked it out and they said, okay, well, maybe you need a root canal. So then I went and saw an endodontist. And
that's fun to do. Let's go to another appointment.
Let's go to another one. Yeah. So they took a CT scan. He said, actually, your tooth is cracked and the crack is now below the gum line. So root canal is not going to do you any good.
No.
So you go back to your regular dentist.
Set that appointment.
I said,
I
need a different referral. So they send me to an oral surgeon or something. And so it's like, well, they're only open like 3 days a week.
That's
and
nice.
Whatever. And so I'm like, okay. I set it up. Basically, when we get back from the Myrtle Beach tournament that the Pilots are playing in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, go get checked out. Go get it taken care of. I'll be
okay. Well, the last couple of days, it felt weird.
Now, and did you bite down on something? Did you eat something that screwed it up?
I don't remember doing anything specific, but the last couple of days after... Yeah, I've been chewing
one side of the mouth only.
Chewing ibuprofen and Tylenol like they're breath mints at this point for 72 hours.
Not fun to deal with,
so,
man.
Yeah, yesterday I got home and it was awful. I did not move from the couch. It was a gorgeous day. I was supposed to go play 9 holes of golf in the afternoon.
Not happening.
I'm just miserable. Called Dennis. Yes, 9:50 a.m. Okay.
I'll be in immediately after the show.
So,
well, you're playing hurt today. Good luck with that. Teeth problems are not fun to deal with.
That and like feet, like a blister in the wrong spot on your foot. Excruciate. Like there's so many concentrated nerves.
Yes.
In your feet.
Having the pain every time you step.
Up your jawline and your ear and the whole thing. And
not fun. By the way, I'm getting we're getting texts at the YouTube not firing right out of the gate here, Swag. So I just wanted to alert you to that. I don't know what's going on there. We're firing on all cylinders on a Football Friday. I'm with you on the tooth thing.
It's running. It's live.
Okay, it says it's live. Is it live? Let us know, people, if it's live. I don't know. When you have teeth problem or when you have bottom of the foot problem, those are two very good ones that are just such a pain in the ass to deal with. The only other thing that I will add to that mix of just like a lot of stuff, you roll your ankle, your knee's aching up or whatever, like a lot of things that you can get over. The only other one, and I dealt with this recently, is when you get the lower back pain. And every time you stand up, you're just immediately in pain or you can't lift anything. That's the only other one that I would throw in there that just is like debilitating. But when you get a tooth that hurts that bad, that you don't feel like you can eat or you don't, like every time you talk, it's in the neck, you get a headache on top of it. None of that is fun to deal with. So we'll see if you can make it through the show today. We got a bad tooth, Sprague's out. I got home yesterday and had to deal with my first instance of a baby vomit. That was fun to deal with.
Wow, you've made it this far. Haven't had like
no. Now he spits up occasionally. Like you get the random I had a little like
you're burping him. That's why you put the towel on your shoulder.
You know that happens every once in a blue moon. And yesterday I walk in the door. I got home about 10:30. Had a couple of packages out on the front porch, so I'm like grabbing the packages, bringing them inside. I'm getting yelled at by the wife immediately because he woke up right when I walked in the door from a nap. And it was, I need help, I need help. And I'm like, come on, I've been home for 90 seconds. I can't get in the house. What's the issue? And I walk into the little guy's room, and his face is covered in vomit because he was laying on his stomach and then puked onto his mattress and then, like, plopped his head down in the puke. And so just right out of the get, right when I get home, it's like ripping the steering wheel off of the car and, like, let's navigate this for the rest of the day. Not enjoyable to deal with 9-month-old vomit. Not fun. I had to change shirts about 7 different times. Thankfully, our pediatrician was open. We feel like we have found the root cause, and it was like a random switch of formula that probably should have been eased in a little bit easier for the little guy. But we dealt with about an hour and a half of vomit the second I walked in the door yesterday. So that's how my Thursday started, right when I got home for work. Baby vomit, Swag's got a bad tooth, Sprague's out. So we're firing on all cylinders on a Friday. We do have a ton to get to on the show. I did want to start, and Sprague has joked about this, and we kind of talked about it a little bit yesterday. His anniversary will always remind me of the show anniversary. And it's one of my, not for Sprague, it's not a favorite memory, but for me, no. It is a hilarious memory to think back on. And so basically, for those of you who don't know how our show started, we started as a night show. And when we were a night show, it was not a everyday show when we first began. It was not something that was on Monday through Friday. Basically, if you want to make it in this industry, you got to try and like carve out your niche of when your show is going to be on and how do we find more airtime and all of that. And back in the day, so this was 12 years ago when we officially began, we had a problem where we would air, ESPN would air NBA games, and we wouldn't want to bump primetime for the ESPN games. So we would want primetime to run through,
yes.
But then primetime would be over, and ESPN would be in like the third quarter of an NBA game, and right. We would have nothing to join. And you don't want to just join a, you know, here's the third quarter from Sacramento. Like, let's send you live down there, right? So that was like our niche that we carved out of like, hey, on these random like Wednesday nights or whatever day of the week it was when there's an NBA game on, why don't we come in, do a show after primetime? We'll go till like 9, and by that time, the NBA game will be over. We'll put you back into ESPN programming. And it was the way we kind of carved out our niche right out of the gate to get some airtime. So we find out when our first show is going to be. And of course, it happens to be the day that Sprague is going to be in Hawaii getting married 12 years ago on this date on November 8th. And our old third co-host, Taylor Danforth, and I came in. We did a show that night after primetime. And basically the way that it went was, yeah, but you're young. I was 23 years old, I think, at the time. I had no clue what I was doing. He had no clue what he was doing. We were just trying to do a show, trying to be funny, trying to be entertaining. But you learn very quickly that when you're first on the air, you're going to get a lot of animosity from people and a lot of like, who the hell are these idiots? You suck. This show is terrible. Like, just the text line floods with that kind of stuff. And so we're doing our two-hour show. I had a take on that show, which, by the way, aged beautifully.
There you go.
But it was criticized at the time, and I thought because of the criticism, holy crap, this is a really bad take. My take on that inaugural show that we had 12 years ago was that the Blazers should preemptively trade LaMarcus Aldridge because you could lose him for nothing if he walks in free agency. And I had a lot of people call me an idiot for that, and then I felt like an idiot because they called me an idiot.
Yeah.
And then a year and a half later, he walked in free agency, and we got nothing for him.
Nothing for him.
So I ended up being right on that part, and I would like to point that out. But the way that it transpired, we were so down at the end of that show based on the listener feedback that we had got throughout the course of the 2 hours that we legitimately thought that was it. Like, we're never going to get another chance. This is over. We will never host another show. And Sprague is on the beach getting married in Hawaii. He's, you know, beautiful sunset.
Yeah.
Happiest day of his life.
Couldn't
like, just
care less. Couldn't about care. LaMarcus
living the dream, right? And we proceeded to call him like four times and apologize to be like, dude, I know you weren't here. I am so sorry. I think that we're going to get fired and we're never going to do a show again. And he's like in the middle of his wedding night hearing this, like, what the hell were you guys doing? And I'll never forget that night for the rest of my life, because what we did was, this is before the days of having to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes I do miss those days. We went and got a pizza. I'm pretty sure I bought a case of beer. We like went to a store, went to a pizza place, grabbed a pizza, grabbed a case of beer. When we went back to our old studio, and we had a little production room in the old studio that we called Prod 3. It was just basically a little broom closet. And we sat in there, we ate pizza, and I pounded probably the entire case of beer, and we went and we listened to the entire show back to be like, was it really that bad? And it was my first lesson in this industry of, it's never as good as you think it is, and it's never as bad as you think it is.
Oh, yeah.
And so we went and listened. We sat there for 2 hours, listened to the entire show, and we left it thinking, all right, I mean, that, you know, we could fix a couple of things there. It wasn't a perfect show by any stretch of the imagination. It wasn't as bad as it felt when you're in the middle of it. And then we texted and apologized to Sprague, sorry, on your wedding night for calling you and making you think that you're fired. And your dream career of hosting a sports radio show is, I don't think it's quite over yet. I think we're going to get one more shot at it. Yeah. But I will always remember that 12 years ago, that's how our career began. A night show and then calling Sprague on his wedding night saying, hey, buddy, sorry, I think we're going to get fired.
No, the first, there will be a first show of something that you'll always remember. For me, it's the first... Rop and I did our own, when we had the Mariners, our own baseball postgame show after
Yes,
Mariners.
After baseball a Mariner today. Game. That is so funny that we used to do that.
So we did, the great Alan Davis.
So about 10 o'clock at night, right? I mean, that
roughly. Well, the very first show. So he said, he didn't actually clear this with Mariners broadcasting. We were just doing this because
why not?
So we basically took over after Riz and Niehaus were done. So they spent about 15 minutes after the game wrapping it up, and then they would send it to whoever was in the studio, and they took calls from Beulah and Ballard, and we love these guys, and right. It was awful.
Yeah.
And so Rop needed something to host regularly. I needed something to produce regularly.
Yeah, kind of cut
Alan
your teeth
said,
a little
no,
bit.
No, these guys are smart. I need something for them to do every day. So yeah, so the first one, it was like 3 weeks after the season started. Monday night, and all of a sudden the game goes to extra innings.
Uh-oh.
12th, 13th, 14th inning.
Looking at your clock, now it's 10:45.
Now it's like 12:30.
Oh, my God.
Rop and I are looking at each other. We're all set to go. We're fired up. I got
first hosting opportunity.
Highlights out the yin-yang. Yeah, he's got notes upon notes.
All these clips, cuts, ready to go.
Who are we calling at this point? We're not waking anybody up.
No.
So, yeah, finally ended. They wrapped it up. 1:15, we went on and did 45 minutes till 2 a.m.
A little 45-minute post-game show.
We got calls.
Yeah.
We got guys back when we took calls.
At 1:45 in the morning?
We got calls.
That is bananas. What day of the week was it? Do you remember?
It was a Monday or Tuesday.
Monday or Tuesday
night. It was
like
the first game of a series. And so, yeah.
On the air till 2 o'clock in the morning. I bet it was smooth sailing, though. Good experience to learn. Yeah, got through it. 1:15 to 2 o'clock.
We love that show. That was so much fun.
It's so fun that we used to do a Mariner postgame show with local Portland hosts after games. We used to be the home of the Mariners. It used to happen. Good times, good memories. Sprague's wedding date will always remind me of that. So we're still here. 12 years later, we have not gotten fired, and the Spragues are still married. So congratulations to them on their wedding anniversary. He is out today. We do have a lot to get to. We'll see if we can navigate the YouTube problem and figure that out during the commercial break. I want to start in Thursday Night Football. What a game that was last night in Baltimore. The Blazers played last night. Did we watch the Blazer game? It was on K2. Shaden Sharp returned. We got to dive into that. Ducks and Beavers with big games this weekend. It's a showdown Saturday in the SEC. Tyson Alger is going to join us coming up at 8:15. He last night, speaking of being up late, and I want to ask him about this, he plays adult beer league hockey.
Yes, very jealous.
I texted him last night, and I said, hey, man, are you around? You know, we're trying for a couple of the college football guests, not really hearing back from people. Tyson Alger is my third down tight end security blanket. You know, I don't book a lot of the guests on the show. That's mainly you, mainly Sprague, so I don't have a lot of the contacts in my phone.
We were
all... And so I'm like, I need some. It's 8 o'clock at night. I need somebody tomorrow on the show. I text Tyson. He's like, I got a hockey game starting at 10:45 tonight. Yeah. What's the latest that I could go on the show? And I said, well, could you make 8:15 work? And he said, yeah, I'll have to do that. I want to know what 10:45 p.m. hockey looks like on a Thursday night. Because that's you just got to get your ice time when you get your ice time. That's the way that it works.
Yep, there's not that many rinks in the area.
There are not. What time does he get home? What's that hangover feel like? Because I know they're chugging beers in the locker room after the game. So we'll talk with Tyson about not only that, but also get his thoughts on Oregon, who is hosting Maryland this weekend. We will, of course, break the line coming up at 8:30, so get your fake sponsors in, 503-864-6326. We have a ton to get to. It is a Football Friday. Thanks for being with us this morning. Let's start with that bananas game in Baltimore last night as the Ravens get the win. Bengals go for two. We'll break it all down, talk about it next on 1080 The Fan.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
All right, welcome back in. Happy Friday morning, everybody. We made it to the end of the week. Trying to navigate the YouTube problem. We'll let you know if we get it resolved. The fact that there are people waiting, watching a blank screen, and communicating via the comment section. I love all of you. Thank you for doing that. Hopefully we'll be up soon. Sometimes we show up and things just aren't working the way they were the day before. You never know what's happening. I don't know who the hell's in here at night and what's going on. But that's the way it works sometimes. So hopefully we'll get that resolved for you. No Sprague again today. Lots to get to. Let's start in Thursday Night Football last night in Baltimore. Boy, oh boy, what a game. You sometimes go in with high expectations and exciting matchups in Thursday night games. And sometimes they live up to the hype. Sometimes they don't. That was one of the better games of the NFL season. I'm hopeful that we get it again next week, too. Because, it, you know, they always show you, like, the promos of upcoming schedules. Here's what Thursday Night Football is the next week. We get Commanders Eagles next Thursday. So that's a nice little NFC East game as well. A couple of teams, especially if the Commanders beat Pittsburgh this weekend. Eagles should move to 7-2 with a win over Dallas, although it is the NFL. So we could be in store for back-to-back great games. It's funny. We were talking a lot about the Bengals yesterday, and you don't often have the ability to watch a game in such a short term after the show that almost backs up everything that you said about a team, and that's kind of what happened last night on Thursday Night Football. So, you know, we were talking about the Bengals and our belief in them and where do they go from here, how much would a win mean, and I had fundamental concerns about two things with Cincinnati, their defense and their ability to run the football when they need to run the football. Joe Burrow is having an unbelievable season, but sometimes you need help as a quarterback in order to win in this league, and I thought Every fear that I had about that team was put on full display last night. Their defense was outstanding early. They were a balanced offense early. Then all of a sudden you get a fumble in the third quarter from Chase Brown, and that entire game turned on its head. It was 21-7 Cincinnati. Brown fumbles, and all of a sudden you look up, and they have scored 21 unanswered points, and they've taken the lead. The issues that they have ended up losing them that game last night. Baltimore scored four straight touchdowns on four consecutive drives, and there was a moment in that fourth quarter where Cincinnati had a seven-point lead. I want to go look at specifically how much time was left. I think there was, give or take, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they were still up by a touchdown. It was still 21-14, if I'm not mistaken. And, excuse me, at that point it was 21-20. So you have a lead in the fourth quarter. It's 21-20. They had a 3rd-and-2 and a 4th-and-2. Trying to pick up a first down. You're trying to milk some clock. The ball is on the Baltimore 34-yard line. So they're driving in. Chance to burn some more clock. 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. 3rd-and-2 and 4th-and-2. And on each instance, instead of running the football and trying to pick up a first down or having any confidence that you can run the football in that situation, they threw a go ball to Ja'Marr Chase, and they threw a go ball to Burton, and both of them were incomplete. They gave the ball back to Baltimore. Baltimore scored a touchdown 7 plays later, got the two-point conversion, and made it 28-21. So you're driving for a chance to either kick a field goal, to burn some more time off the clock, to maybe score a touchdown. And in that moment, they didn't have any confidence in their run game. They threw it deep, and you can criticize Burrow for that. but those were the telltale signs to me of a team that has unbelievable pieces in certain spots on offense, maybe the best in the NFL the way Burrow's playing right now, and weaknesses elsewhere. When you look at the stat lines that Joe Burrow has put out against Baltimore this season, just wrap your head around this.
And Jamar Chase.
Burrow, in the two games combined, he has thrown 9 touchdowns against Baltimore. He threw 5 in the last game, threw 4 last night, only 1 interception. It came in the first game in Cincinnati. Almost threw one last night, but the guy was out of bounds in the end zone. So he's thrown 9 touchdowns. He threw for 428 yards last night. In the first game, he threw for 392 yards. Yeah. In the first game, they scored 38 points as an offense. Last night, they scored 34 points as an offense, and neither of those performances were good enough for them to get a win. And it's just a simple reminder of, at some point, you're going to need some help. Your defense has to get a stop. You got to be able to run the football late in games to try and burn some clock or in the second half. They couldn't do either of those things last night. And as good as Burrow is, he might be good enough to say, you're on our shoulders. Get on my shoulders. We're going to make the playoffs. AFC wildcard race is wide open. And maybe there's a little fear there if you have to play him because of how talented he is in the postseason. But their issues are running the football and defense, and they were on display again last night. Just not good enough.
Yeah, their inability to hold a 2-score lead in the second half.
It's 21-7. They had the game completely under control.
And there were a couple plays. There was the one where Lamar Jackson did a Houdini act on the sideline.
Yes.
And then not being able to just knock Wallace out of bounds on that 86-yard touchdown.
You have 4 different guys maybe that had a crack at him to try and push him out of bounds.
Those are inexcusable.
Longest touchdown pass in Lamar's career.
On those 2 plays you talked about, 3rd and 2, 4th and 2, if you want to take a strike on 3rd and 2, I don't have a problem with that.
Knowing you're going to go for it.
Yeah. But then you got to have on 4th and 2, okay, if you want to send a go guy, if you can catch him, but when he doesn't, that's on Burrow. You got to have a tight end, you got to have a running back, somebody in the flat, or you got to be rolling out somewhere to the open side of the field where you can run for it. And that one's on him.
Yeah, the second one, I disagreed with the throw. I don't know why that's the ball you're throwing on 4th and 2. And I don't know why as an offense you don't have, I should know, I guess I do know why, but the fact that you don't have any trust in your ability to run the football in that spot, we just need 3 yards and you can continue the drive. You end up kicking a field goal, maybe scoring a touchdown on that drive, and maybe we're sitting here talking about a different outcome. It is funny, though, because the way the game ended, and we'll get to some Zach Taylor audio here in a second, I guarantee you there are people who online or were watching at home, whatever, were critical of Todd Bowles for not going for 2 to try and win the game in Kansas City on Monday night, that are also critical of Zach Taylor for going for 2, because for a lot of folks, these decisions come down to the outcome and not the process in making them.
I don't have a problem going for 2. I don't know what they were doing.
No, I don't agree with the play call, and that's totally fair to criticize.
There were 2 penalties you could have called on that on the defense.
I mean, that's a whole other thing that we might get to that coming up in the next segment, because the way the officiating has gone this year
Burrow
in the NFL.
Got whacked in the face mask.
Multiple times.
And Gesicki got held badly.
I mean, he got tackled at the goal line. I mean, he was tackled. How was that not a penalty? You can even argue. I can't even remember who he ended up throwing the ball to there, one of their other tight ends.
It was the other tight end.
But yeah, that was P.I. it looked like, too. He was all over him. Like, you could have thrown
that
4 or 5 flags.
That ball wasn't close to him, but Gesicki got tackled as he tried to make a cut.
And he's right next to the official, too, while it's all going down, looking up. Like, what are you looking at?
I don't know what they're looking at.
I really don't get it, man. But I had no issue with that decision to go for 2 because...
No, I understood that. Momentum was all there. If Lamar gets the ball, you're not getting it back. Your defense hasn't been able to stop him in the second half.
No.
That I understand.
Yeah, there's 38 seconds left. Baltimore's got 2 timeouts, so they got a decent chance to get into field goal position if they need to. And to your point, like they scored a touchdown on 4 consecutive drives. Yeah. Like, now you're going to have faith in your defense to get a stop? Of course there's no faith in that defense to get a stop. 4 straight drives, they allowed a touchdown. And so Zach Taylor goes for 2, had no issue with the decision. I didn't love the play call, or at least the design to not get the ball to one individual who was outstanding last night. Here is Zach Taylor on that decision.
Zach, what was the thought process on the 2-point conversion?
Came here to win.
Why do you think that one messed up the way you know in the second half? Let them back in the game.
You know, we lost turn battle 1-0. I think that was a big, it was 21-7 at that point when we gave them 7 points there, right there on the fumble. Had the big play. And then it kind of went back and forth from there. And there was a good football team. But we expected to come in here and win, and we did everything we could to do that. Doesn't change the fact that I'm proud. I think everybody on that field fought, gave us a chance. Lost the game on the road to a good team, and it's sickening that this has happened twice to us. That's what it is.
That's a brutal, heartbreaking loss. You're, you know, one play away from potentially winning that game. Can't come up with a two-point conversion. No issue with the decision to go for it. I don't have any faith in the Cincinnati defense to get a stop when they need to. The only issue is, and Swag, you brought this up, it is the design of the play. And I don't know how. It's kind of similar. I remember talking about this on Monday with Penn State, Ohio State, where Tyler Warren is the guy that gets you all the way down there. You're inside the five-yard line. You have four shots at scoring a touchdown, and Tyler Warren doesn't see the football. I just hike it to him twice and see if he can score. I don't understand that for the life of me.
This is where if you've got your version of Philly Spud, how do I get the ball in Jamar Chase's hands in space or in the end zone?
In any way. And I thought Herb Street was nailing it before because they called a timeout to see what Baltimore was going to do defensively.
He had him one-on-one.
One-on-one. Just hike and throw it to him. I know sometimes it's not that simple, but sometimes it is that simple. He had 11 catches for 264 yards and three touchdowns last night. Just give him
throwing,
the football. I don't care.
Second or third tight end. There, no.
Throw the ball.
If they have it covered and they have it blanketed, at least if I throw it to Jamar, he's got a chance to make a play.
Yes, and one-on-one coverage, top of the field. I, for the life of me, don't understand. That's not, you know, why the football didn't go there in that moment. But Cincinnati loses a heartbreaker, 35-34. Phenomenal football game. Phenomenal back and forth. It looked like when it was 21-7, like, oh, Baltimore, what a stinker for them. How are they going to feel coming out of this? Then you get the fumble. The entire game flips on its head. Ravens score four straight touchdowns. End up winning 35-34. Let's talk about the officiating impact of this a little bit because it just was on display once again. There is such an easy fix that they will use from time to time that I just, for the life of me, cannot figure out. And so we'll dive into that a little bit. How about Shaedon Sharpe and his return last night in San Antonio? We'll get to that coming up at 6:45. A little bit more on this game, though, last night. Next, talk a little Blazers coming up. They were down in San Antonio last night. Shaedon Sharpe returned. I watched that game. Great to have it on K2 so I could have it on the iPad. I don't know. I'm not quite against Thursday Night Football. I'm not putting you on the big screen. You're not quite big screen worthy against a big-time NFL game. But watching you on the iPad, kept an eye on that game all night, and we'll talk about that one coming up in 10 minutes. We'll start diving into the weekend of college football, both locally and nationally, at the top of the hour. It was, now maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment here, was that the best Thursday night game we've had all year? It certainly felt like it. I'm trying to rack my brain of other Thursday night games, and I'm not saying others haven't, we haven't had other close games, but just in terms of like the fireworks, the back and forth.
Was the season opener? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, season opener was a great game. Baltimore-Kansas City, that's a good point. I guess I view that one a little bit differently than your normal Thursday night game, but that's totally valid. Like, every time it felt like the momentum had been swung one direction, like right when Baltimore came all the way back to take the lead, you get the Jamar Chase touchdown like the first play of the drive. And then, you know, Baltimore had the 84-yard touchdown where
didn't
Wallace didn't go out of bounds.
Tampa play a goofy Thursday?
Tampa and Atlanta had one that was kind of high scoring and Bucky Irving fumbled and they missed a face mask in that game, which will connect us to
exactly
the storyline from the game. So that's one
Do
of the better.
The refs need a full week?
Is I think it, they need. I can't go on a short week anymore. You need more than 3 days to prepare for the next game. That was one of the best games of the year. It was awesome. Division rivals, fog rolling in, like just beautiful November football. 35-34 Baltimore wins. But the storyline for a lot of people coming out of it, especially if you're a Bengals fan, is the way the officiating shook out at the end of that game. And for those who didn't watch or maybe you didn't see all the highlights, on the last drive, Cincinnati's down by 7. They get the ball back. They're trying to go down and score. They missed at least, and by the way, Baltimore probably had four or five penalties on that drive, so they were committing like a personal foul on every play of that possession. They legitimately missed four or five just glaring, horrible calls. They did get one roughing the passer right on Joe Burrow where it was a low-high situation. They called that. There were two times, including the final play of the game for Cincinnati, which was a two-point conversion to try and win. They missed two different times a defensive lineman just either grabbing Joe Burrow's face mask or smashing his face mask with their fist. And we go back a couple of weeks ago when you had that Rams and Vikings game, and this happened in the end zone with Sam Darnold right in front of the official. The very next week was Jets and Texans, and you had an identical play early in the game. And immediately it was buzzed down by replay assist to like, hey, that was a personal foul. That was a face mask. And Herb Street, I think, made the joke at the time. Like, where the hell was that last week? Like, if we have the ability to do this, why are we picking and choosing random spots when we're doing it? And you miss multiple face masks on Burrow. And then on the final play, we're talking about it. Gesicki's basically tackled at the goal line. And they went like NBA, you know, 20 seconds left. You're driving to the hoop. Blah, whatever. Let them play in the paint. No contact's going to be called here. Let's swallow the whistle and not decide the outcome of the game. But you can't tackle a tight end trying to run a route and not get caught. Like, there are certain things like, yeah, maybe he grabbed a little bit or maybe there was a hand there. Let him play to a certain extent. But when there's that much physical contact, you have to throw a flag. And this is just a growing problem, it feels like. And it ends up being viewed as this negative attack on officials and officiating and all that. And it's not the case, genuinely. It's an incredibly difficult job. These are world-class athletes that are running at full speed. Like, how do they not see certain things, depending on where they're lined up? And maybe you don't see the helmet move, but you don't have a glimpse of the hand.
There's 8 of them out there.
There should be, but they also have the ability at times during the game. And there was one moment, I can't remember it off the top of my head, where they used the replay assist. It might have been the Lamar pick that they all of a sudden buzzed down and the ball hit the ground.
But I think there's specific... There's limited windows.
That's my whole point. There doesn't need to
be. Just let it help everything.
They have arbitrarily boxed themselves in of things that they can and cannot overturn. And that's what I don't like. Why is it okay to buzz down and say, hey, that's not an interception or that was a catch? And then, oh, okay, earpiece, go over the microphone, interception or catch. But you can't buzz down 10 seconds later and say, hey, guys, you missed a face mask there. Drop the flag. After replay assist, there was face mask on the play. Half the distance of the goal or 15-yard penalty, and you move on. Like I think they're doing their referees and their officials such a disservice to having all of these eyeballs, all this money that's gambled on every game, these fan bases that are living and dying with the outcome. You're human. You're going to miss things. You're going to miss calls. It's only natural. And to not have the ability to just say, hey, there's a guy upstairs who has instant access to a replay after every play, and I'm not saying buzz down for every ticky-tack. Maybe he kind of grabbed the jersey. There's a hold or a hands to the face or something that happens on every play in football that you could flag if you wanted to. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying look at the ones that are glaring and obvious that would be massive penalties that would change potentially the outcome of games and buzz it down and correct it. They got to eliminate these boxes that they've put themselves in and say, we have unbelievable technology with cameras all over the field, and I can get an instant replay watching on Amazon Prime in my living room where 5 seconds after the play ends, I get a glimpse of it and say, oh, look at that, they missed a call. I know immediately they haven't run the next play yet, buzz it down, fix it. To me, it's just such a simple solution that the NFL is unwilling to unwind and decide that we've had enough of this, we need to help our guys out, and we want it to be better. But look, there are calls that go both ways. I thought you could have made an argument on that last drive for Cincinnati. I can't remember if it was Gesicki or maybe Hudson had that catch. I thought you could have made an argument the ball was moving a little bit when he landed, when they were looking at did he get the line to gain. So there's calls that go both ways throughout the course of a game. But if you're a Bengals fan sitting at home watching that, and you see Joe Burrow on a two-point conversion essentially get punched in the face and your tight end get tackled at the goal line, and that might be the difference between you making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. You're 4-6 now. Now, the AFC wildcard race is not that
Denver
settled.
Denver right now has the last wildcard spot at 5-4.
At 5-4. So you're a game and a half, whatever, out. So you're alive in that race still, technically, but you might look up at the end of the season and finish 9-7 and say, would have been great to have that two-point conversion attempt again in Baltimore back in November, and maybe we win that game. There's just too much on the line now. And our buddy Pate has ranted about this with college football, and he's talked about officiating and how ugly it's been. It was ugly again. We talked about it with the Oregon-Michigan game this weekend. The Evan Stewart, no touchdown catch. Like, there's just a million examples throughout that there's an easy fix here, yet football is deciding let's not have an easy fix despite all of the money that is now being wagered on these games. And if you had Bengals money line last night, you have every right to be livid for not getting another opportunity at that two-point conversion, because they should have had another opportunity at that two-point conversion. Great game, though. Baltimore gets the win. Still alive, likely for the 2 seed. One seed probably out of the picture for them, with Kansas City still being undefeated and the head-to-head win over them. But I think the Bills were 7-2, so Baltimore and Buffalo pushing for that 2 seed in the AFC. Nice win for the Ravens, nice comeback. Awesome Thursday night football game. Now let's hope next week lives up to the hype as well with Commanders and Eagles. The other thing going on last night, were you watching? The Blazers are down in San Antonio taking on Wemby. Shaedon Sharpe returned, and I don't have that many complaints. It's going to be kind of a positive Dirt Blazers segment. We'll get to that coming up next, and then we'll dive into some college football stuff at the top of the hour. Back after this on The Fam. All right, welcome back in. Sorry for everybody trying to watch on YouTube this morning. I believe our engineer is on his way in. Sometimes things go a little haywire. It happens. Feels like old school radio today. I could take my hat off and have my bed hair out. Usually have to put the hat on to cover it up because I'm too lazy in the morning to do anything with it. So we're just, you know, I'm in here shirtless. We're hanging out. You can't see what we're doing. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful morning for radio. We'll talk some college football coming up top of the hour. Now maybe it sounds like go to Baton Rouge at 7:30. We had a late text back from an LSU reporter. And there is a report out there that we need to ask him about. They're going to have a live tiger again on the sideline this weekend.
Oh.
It's been a long time
since
they've done it.
It's been a while since they've had a Bengal. I'm assuming they have one on campus.
Maybe PETA got involved and said you can't do that anymore. I don't know how that works. But they used to essentially put it in a cage right next to the tunnel where the opposing team would run out.
Nice.
And they just throw raw steaks at it. And he's like got blood gushing from its mouth and like have fun with this. There were a couple of former SEC players, and Cole Kubelik was one of them, tweeting yesterday, like, there was nothing more intimidating than running onto the field, turning to your left, and seeing a tiger just with blood gushing down its neck. Like, okay, this is real. This is going to be fun. So they got a live tiger back in Death Valley, and so we'll go to LSU, it sounds like, potentially at 7:30. Got some other college football dealings, including the Ducks and the Beavs, coming up here at the top of the hour. It's a showdown weekend in the SEC. You can't yell at each other on the YouTube chat, but you can yell at me at the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. That's where you can interact with us the entire show and get your fake sponsors in for 8:30 for Spragging the Line. Did we watch the Blazer game last night?
Yes, that was on screen 2.
Screen 2 Blazer game, same for me. Screen 2.
So no sound.
Yeah, not a lot of sound. I would turn it up like during a timeout or commercial or whatever, dial it up to hear what they were yelling about. I mean, I have the similar criticism that I have had, but yes. I will save that for the end of the segment and instead focus on the positive. And there's two main positives. One, you lost the game. Thank you, Jesus. That was a game you could have won, so I appreciate that. Thank you, Blazers. 3-6. Very nice. And the other one was, we talked about on the show yesterday, not sure if it was actually going to happen, and then you get the announcement later on in the afternoon. It's no longer questionable. He's going to be available. Shaedon Sharpe made his return last night. And I know we talked about this a little bit going into the season, but it bears repeating because of how important it is. Like, this is such a massive year for Shaedon Sharpe. Year 2 for him was almost a lost cause. We didn't get that big of a sample size. Now, he played 80 games as a rookie, so I'm not going to go down this whole injury-prone thing. Like, let's see a slightly bigger sample size before we decide that.
Yeah.
Nice to see him back and healthy. He only played 32 games last year. And you got to decide, essentially, this season, I mean, they're going to give him the rookie extension. How much are you going to give him? Where does he fall in that tier of other guys from his draft class? And the other thing that just is always kicking around in the back of my mind, and I know maybe it's not for other fans, but it will always for me, like, they're in the process. I'm not asking you to trust the process, but you're in a process of building a team. If I fast forward to July, and let's say it looked, you know, maybe your dreams of getting Cooper Flagg are not going to happen, and you don't end up with the number one overall pick. You end up with, let's say, the 5th overall pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And it's a deep draft, talented draft. Doesn't mean that that's a death nail. It's not like some other years where it's like, there's 3 good players and then nobody else. A very deep draft class. You're drafting 5th overall, and the best player available is a shooting guard. What are you doing? Are you taking that guy or are you not? And this is where having Shaedon Sharpe back and now getting, hopefully, a long runway for him this year will help dictate that. Where I still think you're in the position of your building and best player available should be your strategy ultimately. But if Shaedon Sharpe comes out and has a tremendous year this year, maybe it's switched. Yeah, all right. We feel like that position's answered for the next however many years. We can plug him in to be our starting 2 guard, and he's going to be great for years to come. Having him back in the lineup, awesome. The jump was there. The bounce was there. He had a backdoor cut at one point that Klingon threw a beautiful pass to him that he finished at the rim. It was really nice to see him back on the floor. And now I just, the only question is, how long does it take for his minutes to ramp up? And when does he get inserted into the starting lineup?
Yeah, no question. And I am more and more following into Sprague. They got to move Ant.
Oh, absolutely.
Ant's just,
now that Sharp's back, especially.
And there's just, he's not a true point guard.
Nope.
And the ball just sticks. So I don't know. I don't know when or how they're going to do it. But
I might pop a bottle of champagne when they trade him, to be honest with you. For the logjam that it will clear, and having Scoot and Shaedon be starting backcourt as they should be, I can't wait.
But I thought Shaedon looked like he was ready to go. And the nice thing about him, especially with all these other guys that need the ball in their hands, He doesn't need to play with the ball in his hands.
No, he does not.
He had a putback, follow-up, dunk. He understands how to follow the play, understands spacing and how to be there. So when the person with the ball in their hands gets triple teamed or whatever, he's available for a drive, a shot. As quickly as he can start playing 30 minutes a night, let's hope then Chauncey will put him in there to do that. And that's the only thing right now is if I cannot figure out what the agenda is.
Well, I don't think they quite know either, which is a bit of a problem.
Who's setting the agenda?
Yeah, it's just watching that game last night again, and it's you don't want to sound like a broken record, but sometimes you do. You're not giving minutes to young guys to learn how to play in certain situations to me is just mind-boggling. You're still in the process of building. You're not going anywhere this year and playing. And this gets back to the ultimate point of Anfernee Simons being on the roster. Like, they're not going to sit him down and say, you got to sit in the fourth quarter of a game as long as he's on the team, which is why a trade needs to happen to clear that logjam. I actually thought Scoot had a really good night last night. Seeing him and Shaden out on the floor again was like, all right, this is going to be fun to watch these guys. I have no clue how it's going to turn out. But this is, these are the two guys that the management staff has started their rebuild around. They had the 7th overall pick and the 3rd overall pick to kick off this rebuild. They took Shaden Sharp and Scoot Henderson. And now we get to find out in year 3 for Shaden and year 2 for Scoot what they're going to be able to do. Each of them only played 20 minutes last night. Now, for Shaden, that's fine. He's coming off an injury. I'm not asking for the guy to go play 40. Up. Like, yeah, that's going to take time.
Yeah.
The fact that, again, your 3rd overall pick from a year ago, who may or may not be a legitimate, like, I don't know where his career is going to go, but playing him 20 minutes a night and not giving him opportunities late in games, to me, you're not going to get the full picture of what he is as a player. I did have the take last night watching him again. I am, despite what some people might believe, I am rooting hard for him to succeed, primarily because I love the aesthetics of Scoot Henderson. Like the afro, the short shorts. I love the way the compression shorts cut. He looks like he's like Terry Porter out there, the way the short shorts.
He looks to me like, I don't know, people that have been around for a while, he looks like T.R. Dunn.
T.R. Dunn, that doesn't ring a bell for me. What era are we talking?
Old school Blazer fans will remember T.R. Dunn.
Yeah. 19, let's see, T.R. Dunn was here. Former basketball, I'm pulling up his basketball reference.
I'm definitely showing my age.
Oh, you are showing your age. 77 to 1980 were the 3 years he was in Portland.
Yeah.
77 to 80. So right out of the championship team, or no, I guess this would have been year
it
after.
It would have been our year
77,
after.
78 was his first year, yeah. It's like very similar look, though. I'm going to Google T.R. Dunn in a Blazer jersey and see what it looks like. I love the aesthetics, man. He's got like the one wristband, the compression shorts sticking out, the short shorts. It's a good look. And I want him to succeed because of that. Because it's a really good look. I'm with you. They are almost identical.
I know.
He had the afro going back in the day. That's a good poll right there. But it looked great to see Shaden back. I'm going to continue hammering it. And Sprague was texting about it last night. It's like, welcome to the dark side, buddy. Like, why are we playing veterans late in games? Let's give these opportunities to young guys. But last night, at least he lost the game.
I don't know why Klingon's only playing 12 minutes.
So, how long is that going to take him to ramp? I just don't get it.
Is there something going on that I don't understand?
He had some foul trouble last night.
Foul trouble's foul trouble, and he's a rookie, and he's going to get into foul trouble. That will happen, buddy.
Yes. He played 20 minutes a game at UConn.
Like, I don't understand what the issue is.
I don't quite get it either, and I don't know. At least they haven't played Robert Williams yet. It sounds like he was available. He didn't get inserted into the lineup.
Yes.
Klingon only playing 12. If you're taking minutes away from your top 10 pick to play Robert Williams, I got an issue with that. And I know DeAndre Ayton had a really good game last night, but that's one of those, like, eventually I hope that logjam gets cleared as well. But, look, outside of the little lineup stuff, and I'd love to see the young guys playing more in the fourth quarter. Scoot usually starts the fourth quarter, gets a couple of minutes early, and then they sit him for the rest of the game. And I'm just looking around like, all right, nothing but veterans on the floor right now. This is great for development. Outside of that, you lost. Shaden Sharp looked good. I thought Scoot had a good game. Klingon, not much, but a little foul trouble for him, and only ended up playing 12 minutes. So not a lot of complaints out of last night's game. Awesome to have Shaden Sharp. What a massive year it is for him this year in year 3 to try and prove he can stay healthy after the injury-riddled season he had last year. And a really good start for him in game 1. The Blazers lose last night in San Antonio. Let's get into some college football. The Ducks are hosting Maryland, a must-win game for Oregon State. Washington's on the road. Can the Cougs' dream season stay alive? It's a showdown Saturday in the SEC. We got a ton of college football coming up in the next hour. Back after this on 1080 The Fam.